right. Welcome to today's interview. And we are joined by none other than John Moore, the Liberty Man. And his website is thelibertyman.com. We haven't spoken with John for, seems like maybe a little too long, a couple of months. He's got updates for us on what he sees happening in the world. We're going to talk a little bit about Russia, going to ask him about midterms and a few other important topics, even some financial topics. But John, or Mr. Moore, I don't know how you prefer to be called, but it's always an honor to have you on.
John's fine. Yeah, good to be here, Mike. Thank you.
It's great to have you.
Well, yeah, let's just jump right in there. The Russian government has activated about a quarter to a third of a million reserve troops. Now, here's how that works. These men and women, assuming there's some women, probably nurses, they'll get a letter in the mail advising them that they've been activated, that they need to report to their designated location. Since they've already been in the military, they already have the training necessary to be soldiers. So that's not necessary. They'll probably bring uniforms with them. They may be issued some new uniforms. They'll get together with their units, whatever the units are. All this takes several weeks, probably a month at the shortest, to get these men and women activated, get them to their units, get them in their uniform, back, so to speak, of being back in the military. It's a process, and you just can't move a quarter to a third of a million people all that quickly.
Yes,
but they're doing it. It's very disruptive. And let's talk about, we talk about financial matters.
Well, but real quick, I want to ask you, what do you think is in Putin's mind here? Does Putin see that this war is definitely going to become much larger and that's what's behind this? Or what do you think?
Well, first of all, it's very disruptive to any economy to activate that many men and women all at one time. It's very disruptive because these men and women, they have lives, they have jobs. And you wouldn't do such a thing unless you had no choice. So Vladimir feels he has no choice. He has to activate these reservists to fill out the ranks in the military, to do whatever he thinks is coming at him or whatever he proposes to do that requires those troops. I wouldn't call it an act of desperation, because that would be a general mobilization. That's not what this is. This is not a general mobilization where they simply do a draft of all men 18 years and older. That's not what's going on.
Right.
They're bringing in reservists. So this is a measured thing where they're taking it a step at a time to bring in the reservists to fill out the ranks and get ready. And now it doesn't mean there's going to be a major war. It looks like they're getting ready for a regional conflict, not a major war. If it was a major war, if they're getting ready for World War III, they would have a general mobilization and immediately draft all men 18 years and older. They're not doing that.
Okay. So what about the, his mention of defensive use of nuclear weapons, if necessary, if Russia feels existentially threatened? What do you make of that?
Well, I think that's for making a statement. It's more for political purposes. And here's why I say that. Russians have developed these fuel air bombs to a degree that they can use those, cause pretty much the same destruction as atomic weapons, and not have to deal with the radiation fallout or the political fallout that would come from adverse world opinion, because it's just a conventional weapon.
Right.
So they can use the threat of nuclear weapons, which of course they have the nuclear weapons, while actually going ahead and using the fuel air bombs. In addition, I should mention this. The Russians and Chinese both have developed atomic weapons that have a very low radiation signature, these would be the smaller weapons. But if you want to take out a square mile, for example, and use an atomic weapon, they have atomic weapons, nuclear weapons, that put out almost no radiation, which makes them a lot more usable from their point of view. And of course, less political fallout as well, because they can rightfully and truthfully make the statement that these nuclear weapons don't have the fallout that we saw from Hiroshima and Nagasaki. One of my American Legion guys, he was at both sites within a few weeks of the atomic weapons being set off. He suffered from cancer. He's still alive, by the way. He suffered from various cancers all his life. Tough guy. So these threats should be taken seriously. They really should.
And doesn't Russia have nuclear artillery rounds? As well? I know the United States does.
Both sides have had those. Yeah. In fact, the Russians have rifle grenades. Now, that's a grenade that fits on the end of a rifle. You use special ammunition to shoot it, not regular rifle ammunition. And it has they have the power of 155 millimeter howitzer shell, which is destroy a three-story building with one round. They've developed some pretty fantastic weapons the past few decades that I'm sure they have them in their inventory and ready to use them if necessary.
Well, who's going to ever back down in this conflict? Right now, I believe Luhansk and Donetsk are about to vote on a referendum to join Russia. If that goes through and if Russia accepts it, then those two republics would become part of the Russian Federation. Putin would claim any attacks on those regions are attacks on Russia itself.
Right.
While, of course, Ukraine and NATO would dispute that and say, no, that's part of Ukraine. But I mean, I don't see, but I'm asking you, whoever backs down in these scenarios? I don't
see it. That's a good question. That's a good question. And I haven't seen either side backing down yet.
No.
Let's back up a bit. There's no good guys in this. The Ukraine government is basically the mafia. My heart goes out to the people of Ukraine, not the government. The government of Ukraine is just as corrupt as a government can possibly be.
Yeah.
The Russians, I don't consider them good guys either, as far as the government's concerned. I love the Russian people, but the Russian government is it's a communist dictatorship. There's no two ways about it. So I don't root for either side, quite frankly. I really don't. Even though I spent much of 2015, I was asked by one of my associates to put together a team and go to Ukraine to teach Ukrainian special forces to be compliant with NATO special forces. It turned out the operation did not happen, but that's what I spent much of 2015 doing, was preparing to go on that operation.
Huh.
My heart goes out to the people. It's always the innocent men, women, and children who pay the price in any war. And that's true of all modern wars.
That's right.
Unfortunately. Who's going to back down? I don't know, Mike. Both sides are posturing. We got this Zelensky character acting like he's some kind of Hollywood star or rock star going around the world making these various appearances. Vladimir Putin is being the tough guy that he is, and he's genuinely a tough guy. There's no two ways about that.
Let's if we were to compare this to, let's say, a self-defense shooting situation, and I know you're a firearms instructor. You've taught many thousands of people about firearms, and I remember one of my instructors years back saying that one of the reasons that you shoot the attacker with multiple 9mm rounds is to get them to reconsider what they were doing there.
Well, I've never heard it put that way, but with the less powerful rounds, we always teach double tap, just to be sure. Two rounds in center of mass. It's only been about the last 2 weeks that Russia started attacking the power grid of Ukraine.
Yes.
And that's been kind of a mystery to many of us, my military buddies. Why did they wait 9 months to attack the national power grid? That's kind of a mystery, because any modern country, and much of Ukraine is very modern, it's not all farmland. When you attack the power grid, you basically shut down the whole country. And they waited 9 months to do that. That's kind of a mystery why they waited that long.
Well, and also after that one strike that you just referred to, they allowed the system to be repaired and back online. They did not follow it up to keep the system down.
Well, are they looking to the day when this war is over and they don't want the Ukrainians mad at them for the next decade or two?
I think so. I mean, it's clear Russia does not want to destroy the entire civilian infrastructure.
No,
of Ukraine.
Obviously not. Yeah. And they obviously have the capability of doing so.
Clearly. But they did want to stop the electric trains, though, because most of Ukraine's trains, I understand, are electric rather than, you know, diesel electric. In other words, there's like a power station and there are electrified lines on the rail system.
Right. Well, that's pretty easy to do. You knock out the power station, station, you knock out the whole system. And that's something not quickly or easily repaired. This war in Ukraine, it's the first land war in Europe since World War II, as far as a war of, you know, of any consequence. And it's dangerous. It's extremely dangerous. We the United States has talked about now shipping missiles that have a longer reach, a longer range. Russia has said that's a red line that can't be crossed. And we need to take these kind of responses seriously.
Those lines, see, part of what I'm observing, and of course, I want to know your take on it, but all of the NATO leaders, they do is double down on their kind of arrogance and insanity in all of this, too. I mean, I don't see the leaders of Germany or the UK or the US doing anything rational, like saying, hey, let's sit down and negotiate some common ground, and or let's honor our Minsk agreement that we already signed years ago, right? There's nothing from the West either that gives me confidence that the leaders are rational.
Well, the Minsk agreement, when the Soviet Union broke up, Ukraine had nuclear weapons, and that scared the hell out of NATO and Russia both. And the agreement was to have Ukraine give up the nuclear weapons in return for being protected by NATO countries. That was the agreement, and as I recall it. Anyway, the Minsk agreement has not been followed as it was written. It's probably too late to try to go back and salvage it. I don't know.
Yes, it is.
Why would the Russians believe we're going to, you know, keep our word down? We didn't keep it in the first place.
Well, and then the other thing that has happened since then, of course, is the NATO countries in the West implemented the economic sanctions, cutting off Russia from the SWIFT system.
That really hurt Russia, exactly.
Well, right. And then I think that sent a message to Russia, which is that we, the West, are absolutely going to destroy you by any means possible, and that we're not willing to even trade with you any longer. So, well, I mean, what's the message there?
Well, all petroleum products is an international market, and we shot ourselves in the foot thinking it would hurt them. It didn't hurt them at all.
That's right.
They continue to sell their natural gas, their gasoline, diesel fuel, whatever. It's an international market. That's foolish to think we were hurting Russia. All we're doing was hurting ourselves, and increasing the price of our petroleum products.
Yes.
I understand that Russia is selling petroleum products to a third country, which in turn is selling them back to Europe.
Yeah, that's right. It's oil laundering actually taking place right now through, I think, Turkey and maybe India as well, some of that.
Precisely.
Yeah. And then it's like, oh, well, the Europeans can say, well, we didn't buy energy from Russia. We bought it from Turkey. Well, it's Russian oil in the Turkish freighter.
What a game.
Yeah. They just changed the paperwork. Okay. Let's shift gears here in the interest of time. What about the midterms? They're coming up here, not that far away.
Less than 50 days.
Yep.
The smart money seems to be on conservative Republicans taking over the House of Representatives. The same people are saying that the Senate is a toss-up. Now, all spending authority comes out of the House of Representatives, Senate cannot authorize a penny to be spent on its own. The President of the United States can't spend any money that hasn't been authorized by Congress first. So Republicans controlling Congress can shut down all money spending by the Biden administration if they want to. If it's a veto-proof majority in the House of Representatives, which really needs to happen. really needs to happen.
Well, but getting to that veto-proof number might be quite difficult. I've heard as high as maybe 50 seats flipping red, but I'm not sure that's even a high enough number for what would it be, a 3/5 majority? What's required for?
Well, I believe two-thirds is veto-proof, but the more Republicans in the House of Representatives, the better. We have about a dozen states that have changed their voting protocols to the point where they'll probably have free and fair elections. We're having more and more evidence come out of the fraud that was committed in November 2020.
Yes.
Unfortunately, these things, they just take time. Our legal system cannot go any faster than it goes. And I spent most of my adult life in this legal system.
That's right. Yeah, I should remind our readers that you spent a number of years as a detective.
Right? Homicide detective.
Homicide detective.
Trial assistant, paralegal. I was involved in high stakes civil and criminal matters for half a century, basically, at some very high, where life and property was at risk. I know these, our legal system moves forward in 30-day blocks of time, whether it's a state system or the federal system, and you can't get away from that. That's just simply the way it works. The John Durham investigation is making some progress. Indictments are going out, I'd love to see it move, go faster, but it can't. It's just the nature of this kind of investigation.
So, John, do you believe that we are going to make it to midterm voting day, or is there a possibility of
desperate people do desperate things, Mike?
Right, that's my question.
Well, yeah. I know, and the Democrats are desperate. Their COVID pandemic thing has come to an end. That's over. It's finished. Free and fair elections will mean the end of the Democratic Party. And of course, talking about shooting themselves in the foot, these COVID clot shot vaccinations are going to kill off a lot more Democrats than our Republicans.
That's true.
They embrace these things far more than the Republicans did. So they got a small window here of making use of their whatever states still have the Dominion voting machines, whatever states still have the mail-in ballots, to have one more fraudulent election. And getting back to the original premise, desperate men do desperate things. What's going to happen between now and the November election? I don't know. But if they're convinced they're going to lose, they may do anything they need to just simply shut down the election if it comes down to it. That's certainly a possibility. Everything's on the table, Mike.
But given that our elections are so distributed, though, across the country, they're run by the states, it would have to be something so enormous that it would have national implications. I mean, do you think they're capable of something on that kind of scale?
Well, we've spent 2.5 years of them being capable with this make-believe pandemic.
Yeah, you're right.
The whole thing was a fraud. I call it the make-believe pandemic. There was no pandemic.
That's right.
So if they did it once, why not do it again? They're willing to kill tens of millions of people with these clot shots. And that's happening right now. It will happen for years to the future. Why not speed it up and kill more people more quickly? Whatever it takes. If they have access to destructive weapons of some kind, they may go ahead and use them. These people are pure evil, Mike. They'll do whatever it takes.
You don't have to tell me. Yeah, they're pure evil. And they're also, a lot of them are Luciferians, and they want to see mass suffering and death. What about them being able to provoke, for example, Russia into an escalation that goes nuclear, so that domestically it could be declared, hey, we're in a state of war now, no more elections, it's wartime. Is that possible?
Of course it's possible. It's myself, you, our listeners, already prepared for that for the most part, because we're aware. Your listeners and my listeners, Mike, we do something most Americans don't, that we own and read books.
Right.
Most Americans don't. Well, they don't, So whatever the Democrats throw at us, or the Russians or the communists, we're as ready as we can be to deal with it. So we hear the term false flag a lot. And we just spent 2.5 years watching the most egregious false flag, make-believe thing that's convinced people that there was a pandemic so they would in turn go ahead and get the clot shot that's killing these people all over the, mostly the Western world, not so much in China and India or Russia. They're smart enough not to get the clot shot, but the Western world is rolling up their sleeves.
That's right. Quite an effective bioweapon for Western Europe and the United States and Canada.
Exactly.
Let me shift gears, if that's okay. There's breaking news a few hours ago. Texas Governor Abbott declared that the Mexican drug cartels are FTOs, foreign terrorist organizations, which means the state of Texas just declared war on the drug cartels. And he's declared that fentanyl is a weapon of mass destruction and is saying that drug dealers caught with fentanyl are going to be charged with murder, which I want to ask you, since you're a prosecutor, a detective of homicide, wouldn't that be a difficult charge to make stick to just to say, well, because you're carrying these drugs, you're a murderer? I mean, don't you have to prove that who was murdered? Where's the body?
Well,
sorry, did I open a can of worms there?
Well, no, not really. I mean, I spent a lot of my life dealing with these. The Texas statutes would have to be modified to specify fentanyl as a something
like a poison.
There's no, I don't believe there's any legitimate use for fentanyl, is there, or not? Am I wrong?
Well, in medicine, as a prescription painkiller, it's used.
Used in that manner.
It's a controlled substance, yeah.
Okay. You'd have to have a special category or classification to for simple possession to be a murder charge. That's an interesting legal question. It would be up to the Texas legislature, the Texas Attorney General, the Texas Supreme Court might get involved. I don't know. Probably not. At some point they may to modify Texas statutes to where they could comply with the wishes of the governor. There's not going to be any resistance to this of any consequence.
Well, no, but I'm just thinking in terms of legal principles. If someone charges, if you get charged with murder, your criminal defense attorney is going to say, well, produce the body and the evidence of who was murdered and how my client carried out that murder. Right.
Right. Right. We still have jurisprudence and I'm not sure how simple possession of fentanyl could lead to a murder charge by itself.
Well, let me ask you a different question but it's related. So Governor Abbott said that he's going to order the state of Texas and the different departments to, quote, target, seize, and dismantle the infrastructure, assets, vehicles, and buildings used by foreign terrorist organizations, which is the drug smugglers, to smuggle drugs and people into and throughout Texas. What do you suppose that's going to look like? Because
already be doing that.
Yeah,
if they know the location of any of the things you just mentioned, they should already be doing those things. I don't know what's different.
Good question. I mean, yeah. What are they just letting these people go right now? I don't think so.
Well, that's what's implied. What's implied is that they already know the location of drug cartel assets, which is what you just described, and they're not doing anything about it. And now they are going to do something about it. That's absurd.
It's absurd that they hadn't been doing something about it.
Precisely.
Right. I just wanted to clarify what you were saying.
Yes. Yes. So I'm not, I haven't seen, is this a written statement or a verbal?
Yeah, that's a written statement, actually, it just came out a few hours ago. It was accompanied by a press conference from the governor with these written things. But it's clear that he's sending out orders to all the state agencies, basically saying, hey, figure out ways to stop the fentanyl traffickers.
Well, it's coming across the border and, that border, there's parts of that border. You're in Texas. That parts of that border where human beings simply rarely go under any normal circumstances.
Oh yeah, no, they just walk. They just walk right across. There's nothing stopping them. But there's also then 24 attorneys general of other states have signed a letter with Texas, demanding that the White House declare fentanyl to be a, quote, weapon of mass destruction, so that there's federal, some federal designation of this substance.
Well, we got, is it 50,000 or 100,000 Americans dying a year from fentanyl?
I read it was somewhere like 60,000 to 70,000. You're in the right range.
Okay. Well, that's the equivalent of everybody that died in 10 years of Vietnam in 1 year.
That's right.
That's crazy. And these youngsters killing themselves, they don't know they're killing themselves, but they're getting these incredibly powerful drugs, killing themselves. It's real. It's a national tragedy.
Absolutely. Well, and I wonder with federal law enforcement right now having a really bad reputation in the minds of most Americans because they're going after, quote, white supremacists and the, you know, January 6th people. It's like, hey, why don't you spend your resources going after actual, you know, fentanyl traffickers?
The job of the Drug Enforcement Agency, also called the DEA, is to protect the government monopoly on drugs, is what it is.
Yeah.
I debriefed a retired DEA field agent. He spent 20 years in the field. And he says, John, every drug interdiction operation I did for 20 years, once we got to the third level above the street dealer, the operation was shut down. We're all reassigned.
Wow.
And because once you get to the fourth level above the street dealer, you start bumping into people connected to the government. So the real job of the DEA is to protect the government monopoly on drugs. That's the real job, unfortunately.
Well, that's interesting, because that's going to collide with this everybody, whole fentanyl. This is,
everybody in law enforcement knows this. It's no secret.
No, you're right. And Jeffrey Prather has talked about this too, and elements of the...
It's no secret at all.
Yeah,
It's everybody, you know. Once a rookie gets out of the police academy and they've been on the street for, oh, say 6 months, they know this. And yeah. I've run into it myself. I was on a surveillance in St. Louis, Missouri. Right behind where I had my surveillance vehicle, I noticed beginning about mid-morning, it was a 12-hour surveillance from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., about every 15 minutes, a vehicle would stop. People would go to the door. They'd be there 2 to 3 minutes and be gone. After that happened 3 or 4 times, I started making a note of the time, the description of the vehicle, and so forth. At the end of the day, I had a legal pad full of all the license plates of all the people that had visited this drug house that I was parked right in front of. I offered it to the St. Louis police, and they didn't want it. They said, oh, John, we're all our men are busy chasing some guy who's hurting people with a knife or some silliness. And I said, listen, there's over 1,000 people in your police force. You know, I've got your case made for you. This is a drug house. I got all the license plates, the time they were there, and they didn't want it.
Wow.
They simply did not. I did their work for them.
And they still didn't want it.
They didn't want it. No.
All right. In the last few minutes here, and thank you for spending time with us this late this evening. Let me ask you this. With food inflation going through the roof and, the economy now contracting quite substantially, interest rates going up, people are going to be losing money in housing, a lot of people are going to get laid off and so on. Society is going to become more desperate. You, as a homicide detective for so many years, what do you think America's cities are going to look like as this worsens over the next year or two?
Well, these cities are already very dangerous. My hometown of St. Louis is listed as one of the most dangerous cities in the country. I'm not going to get into the demographics of why that is, but they will continue to become more dangerous and people will become more desperate. These cars are so hard to steal these days that carjacking has been the only way to steal these cars, because once this thing's parked and locked up, you can't really steal the darn things. So we're going to see more carjackings and more desperate people, more use of drugs. These cities will become very unhealthy, very dangerous places to be, even more than what they are now, Mike. That's exactly where it's going.
And then doesn't that underscore the importance of people to learn self-defense and firearms training? And
well, handling? Obviously it does, but it's better just not to be there. If you have to spend time in a city or visit a city, being armed and trained to use firearms is really the best way to protect yourself and the people you love.
Well, yeah, I completely agree with you. Obviously, just I hope we make it to the midterms. I hope we have fair and free elections. If we do, we could you know,
there's going to be block parties. These places that have these drop boxes, they're going to be tailgate parties all night long. Everybody who approaches the drop boxes will be videotaped.
Yep.
And we didn't do that in November 2020.
No, but they can still run stacks of fake ballots in the counting locations.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the mail-in box, the thousands of mail-in ballots that were never folded and put in an envelope. I mean, how blatant can you be?
Well, I say unless these ballots are serialized, it'll never be safe. I mean, why don't you have a unique ID number printed on every ballot?
Well, it's easy to do. The technology we've got, that's a piece of cake.
Yeah, but no one does it. No one.
Well, it needs to happen, doesn't it? We need to have...
Every unique ID number should only count one time, period, even if it's scanned 10 times.
I had a speaking engagement at the home of the former president of the Bank of the Philippines a few years ago, and they were so proud they were going to get electronic voting machines. I was talking to this doctor. He speaks better English than my hillbilly neighbors. And I said, Doc, don't do that. What you need are paper ballots counted at the precinct. Paper ballots with a carbon copy counted at the precinct. It's not that big a deal. You're talking about 300 or 400 pieces of paper. 4 to 6 adults can count those in less than an hour. It's not a big deal.
Right.
And it may sound primitive. It may sound cumbersome, but it's the only way I'm aware of that we can have as close to possible free and fair elections, paper ballots with a carbon copy counted at the precinct.
That's right.
That's what needs to happen. And whatever we can do, Mike, you and I, when we do these shows, to encourage people to do that in all 50 states, that's what needs to happen.
Yeah, nationwide voter ID and nationwide paper ballots.
Absolutely.
Low tech, very simple, no algorithms. So John, in addition to your website, thelibertyman.com, tell people about how they can tune in. You've got a radio show 5 days a week, I believe.
Right. It's 5 days a week, 7 to 10 a.m. Central Time. Everything's linked from my website to listen live, listen to the archives. Regular guests that are very well qualified in their areas of expertise. And it's a lot of fun. And it's a live call-in show. So we invite people to call in and state their questions or comments. It's a lot of fun, Mike.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again for taking the time and for all that you do and for hosting that show Monday through Friday. And folks, the website is thelibertyman.com. And thank you again, John. It's
thank you, Mike. You're welcome. Have a good evening.
Have a good night. Yep.